Welcome to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. I'm Matthew of castingacross.com, where I explore the quarry and culture of fly fishing. This is episode 177 of the podcast, and we are going to talk about reels. Now, I talk a lot about fly rods because fly rods are pretty fantastic. They're fun to use, they're fun to hold, they're fun to look at, they're fun to collect, but reels are pretty darn important too. But that being said, I would say that for every one article or podcast that I do about reels on Casting Across, there's probably about seven on fly rods. But the crazy thing is I go downstairs and I probably have one-to-one rods and reels. I have as many reels as I have rods. But being a primarily trout guy, my reels aren't nearly as exciting as my rods. But I do have some good reels, and so I am going to give them their moment in the sun. So we're going to talk about a few different things to think about with fly reels. Not necessarily how to choose them, although a lot of the things that I'm going to mention today are going to factor in potentially on how I choose a fly reel. But just a few things to think about with reel maintenance, with pairing other gear with your reel, and I guess a little bit of reel selection too. So the first thing, and there's an article called The Tale of the Tape back on Casting Across from a while ago, and this is one of the things I think is not talked about nearly enough, and that is you want your reel to balance well with your fly rod. You want your reel to balance well with your fly rod. It is going to change your cast significantly. Even an ounce on like a super light trout rod, having an ounce too heavy of a reel is going to make a huge difference. Conversely, if you're doing something like Euro nymphing and your reel is too light, then your 10, 11, 12 foot rod, even if it's a 3 or 4 weight, is going to be just really torquing down from the tip end as you're high sticking and trying to maintain a nice steady handle and get a lot of feel trying to figure out if you're getting nicks and taps from bites. So you want a reel that balances well. So how do you deal with this? As I've talked about before, there's two things you can do. One, make sure that you have a place that will give you a rod and reel to at least put on. If not cast, but get a reel out of the case and the rod that you want. And even if it's pantomime casting, if they don't have that particular reel lined up, you can at least say, okay, this feels right, this feels balanced. Because the fly line's not going to add that much weight, even in a saltwater rig. Having a backing and line spooled up on that reel isn't going to change it significantly to the point where it's going to feel completely different than when you had it empty. And of course, that's because if you're talking about, you know, it adds exponential amount of line and backing. So you have a tiny little trout reel and tiny little trout rod, you only got to get a tiny little bit of backing and tiny little bit of line, very, very low grain weight. So it's going to modify it slightly. You bump up to a big saltwater reel, it's going to be a lot of backing and it's going to be a lot of line, but it's going to be on a really big bulky reel and a really big bulky rod. So it's not going to make that big of an impact. So find a fly shop that is going to let you take a reel out of the reel case, put it on the rod that you already own or the rod that you're buying from them, and at least wiggle it around in the store, take it on the parking lot, and kind of pretend to do what you're going to do, and make sure it feels good, both in casting, it doesn't feel like it's too heavy underneath the butt of your wrist, or if it's too top heavy, it feels like it kind of wants to pull itself out of your hand, where the rod grip is leaving between your thumb and your index finger. You'll know it when you feel it, and it's wrong like that. You will know. I think by and large, most reels match well. If it's like a reel that's designed for 4 or 5 weight or 5 or 6 weight, it's going to match well with a 5 weight rod. But there are some reels that are going to be too heavy, and some reels that are going to be way too light for certain rods. I have a super light reel, and it does not pair well with my bamboo rods because it doesn't offer any counterbalance to that slower action. Even though it's a light, modern, contemporary bamboo fly rod, it still has that slower action. So when it is flexing, it feels like it wants to pull itself out of the top of my hand. If I have no rod, no weight down below it in a good solid reel. I also have the opposite situation where I have reels that are super heavy. Like I have a reel that's a little bit bulky, but still kind of technically matches with a 6-weight rod. But this particular reel, it's heavy to begin with. And then I have a weighted, a density compensated line on it that I use for like 7 or 8 weight. So when this thing gets on a lighter 6-weight, it just feels way too heavy, and it's not comfortable to cast for a long period of time. So those are just some things to think about. Now, you can make your reel heavier if you are in a situation where you have a really, really light reel. A little bit of lead tape or weighted tape around the inside of that spool before you put backing on is the way to go about it. But that's a whole article on castingacross.com called Tale of the Tape. So you can check that out. But since we are on the inside of the spool of the reel, let's talk real quick about backing. Best thing you can do with backing is to go to a fly shop and have them put backing on for you. If you are experienced in this, you can probably do it pretty well. And you know, I'm super hypocritical in the fact that I just spooled up a spool of backing onto a new fly reel at home just a couple days ago. But as I was doing it, I'm looking at it, I'm thinking, this is okay, but it's not great, especially under two circumstances. One, it's a saltwater reel, and you want all the backing on there that you can have, or you're using gel spun backing, and you want to make sure that it is lined up perfectly and it's not loose, because that stuff will bind and pull into itself, and then you'll get a really, really bad tangle, and now there's no point to have backing. At that point, you might as well just tie your fly line to the inside of your spool. So that's the first one. The second one is if you are fishing with a really light reel or really small reel and you don't have that much backing capacity, you want every foot that you can fit on there without leaving too much empty space on that reel. So if you go to a shop and they have a spooling device, they're going to be able to count off the feet or the yards, whatever it is, that you are able to get on that reel and get it done perfectly with the perfect tautness, and it's going to probably have some sort of guide such that it lays down perfectly. It's not going to be, you know, clumped up on one side. There's not going to be any bumps in it. It's going to be nice and smooth. I remember when I was working at a fly shop when I was in my late teens, and after like spooling up two reels to practice, I was doing it flawlessly. So there's no level of expertise that is involved, but anybody at a fly shop will hopefully happily spool you up. And any fly shop worth their weight, and I'm sure there's people out there that don't do that, but I think it's kind of silly that you don't. If you buy a reel and a line, they ought to spool up your reel with backing and line, but also give you your backing for free. There's no reason why, if they just sold, you know, bare minimum $250 of equipment, they can't fork over maybe $5 worth of backing. And they should let you choose which color you want to. But another reason for this is that you can't always buy spools of backing in the exact amount that you want to and need to put on your reel. So a reel I had recently said, okay, it takes 150 yards of 20-pound backing. Well, I had either a 100-yard spool or a 200-yard spool in my possession. I could have gone out and bought a 150-yard spool of backing, but I don't need more gear to then now just either throw away 50 yards of backing or have 50 yards of backing sitting around. So I had to eyeball it. And the problem with eyeballing it is if you put on too much, now your fly line isn't going to fit on right. Or you end up playing this game where you're like, well, if I reel it in perfectly and reel it in tightly, then it will fit. But that's not what happens in the field, and chances are you're going to get frustrated with that very soon, because your cage of your reel is going to have some place where it connects for stability and for structural integrity, and that piece, both by your reel foot and probably on the opposite end of the reel, the part that's further away from your rod butt, that's going to rub against your fly line, and you can actually damage your fly line pretty good by rubbing against those spots as you rotate that reel every time you reel. So you don't want that to be the case. But if you put too much backing on there, you're going to be faced with that dilemma. So then what do you end up doing? You end up pulling all that line off, which isn't awful. I mean, you're talking about 90 feet top. So you pull it all off, and you then start stripping out backing. And then you run into one or two problems if you take too much off or you don't put enough on to begin with. The first one is that now you don't have as much backing as you should have, or now you have a really, really tight little spool that your fly line is wound around. And every, you know, centimeter matters in reducing that memory of that fly line. You don't want line that is in this tight little coil. So you want the right amount of backing, both so that you have that extra backing for if you do get into a fish, and secondly, so that your spool width is as wide of a diameter as possible to cut down on the memory on that fly line. And the best way to accommodate that is to go to a fly shop that will spool things up for you with the right amount of backing. Another thing that you should pay attention to when you're looking at a reel, either for the first time or when you're inspecting your reels for the season, is the handle. I can't tell you how many times a handle has been the bane of my existence, and a few things have caused this problem. One, it gets slippery from something like sunscreen or bug spray. I hate sunscreen. I hate bug spray, which I've talked about at length before, and I'm not going on that rabbit trail right now. But if you have a handle that is really smooth, and I've encountered those wooden handles with hard plastic handles, rubberized handles usually hold up a little bit better with this. But that is a frustrating thing, especially when that handle is able to spin. So it's on a screw, but it's offset enough from the body of the reel that the handle can spin. That way you can hold it tightly and you can reel. But if it does spin and it's a little bit greasy, then it's still going to be spinning in between your fingers. But the other problem is reels that have a handle that is not perfectly round, so kind of that paddle style that especially that you've come to expect with a lot of modern reels, but especially larger reels, saltwater reels, things like that, where it's not something you're going to pinch just between the tip of your thumb and forefinger like with a trout reel, but you're going to grab with your thumb and probably your first knuckle or your second knuckle of your index finger. Now those, the problem comes if that screw gets too tight or there's some gunk that gets in between that handle of that reel and the reel itself, and it starts to stick. Because once you're moving that thing quickly, and now if that little handle for that reel does not spin freely so that your hand is able to move in whatever motion you want your hand to move to comfortably and quickly reel that in, and you're forced to bend your wrist or the thing slips out of your hands if you're trying to reel real fast but it's not spinning with you, huge frustration. So if you are finding that your reel knob is starting to get a little bit sticky, you can do a couple things. I would say the easiest and first things to do is use a little bit of lubricant, make sure it doesn't get onto your line, make sure it doesn't get into your drag, but just put it in where that screw is, both the head of the screw, and if that doesn't do a whole lot, then maybe down by where that reel handle connects with the body of your reel frame. And if you do that, I guess it wouldn't be your reel frame, it would be your spool frame. But anyway, do it there, let it soak in, wipe it up so it doesn't get all over everything, doesn't get on the reel handle itself so it doesn't get greasy, and see if that works. If not, you can try backing off on your screw a little bit with just a very, very light hand, quarter turns. And you'll find that usually that fixes it. Sometimes things just get tightened up. If it got a little bit stuck and then you rotated it, it could have tightened that screw on you. But that can happen. Small things, but I have a couple reels that were just giving me so many problems and I was just dealing with it for so long. And I realized, you know what, why don't I fix this? And now it's not as uncomfortable. And again, little things like that aren't a huge deal until it happens over and over and over again. You realize I'm expending a lot of energy worrying about this. I might as well just take a second and fix it. And it's a very, very easy fix. So check your reel handles. And if they're sticky, then fix them. Another maintenance issue to consider is your reel foot. So the reel foot is the part of the reel that slides onto the reel seat of your rod. And the particular points of interest that I'm thinking of are where it slides up under the handle, the grip, and then where the uplocking portion slides up and over the reel foot. So what can happen is if you drop your reels, which the best of us do, my goodness, I think I mentioned this in a podcast, but I dropped a reel recently because I was just not thinking and my brain wasn't working and I had my fly in one hand and my rod and reel in the other hand and I'm getting ready to drop the fly to fish with it and I just completely held onto the fly and dropped my rod and reel and hooked myself and like jacked up my reel at the same time. Just a real classy move. I think it was the last day of fishing of the 2021 season is when I did that. But anyway, reel seats, or excuse me, reel foot. The reel foot can get bent, and if you're fishing with a lighter reel, like a trout reel, or you're fishing with a die cast reel and you drop it, that's probably one of the two situations where you're going to get it bent a little bit. Now, what's the problem with this? The problem with this is that once you slide it onto the reel seat, if it's only slightly bent and it doesn't feel that different, a couple things are going to happen. One, it's going to be bent enough that you're going to have to tighten that uplocking seat of the rod butt onto it tighter than you should, and it's going to start to distort part of that hardware that holds your reel on your rod, and that will happen over time. Secondly, it might put it off kilter ever so slightly, and so you're not going to be able to get a nice tight connection. And what will happen is that it will fight against the hardware that's locking your reel onto your rod, and it will loosen up over time, and it'll eventually, as you're making a big fast double haul cast, it's going to come sliding off and drop into the water at your feet, which again, hopefully you've got enough line through your guides and through your rod tip where you're going to be able to retrieve it, no problem, but it's very inconvenient and it's a way to further damage your reel. So inspect your reel seat every once in a while, just set it on a table and it's a concave surface on the bottom of that reel foot because it has to adapt to a potentially convex rod reel seat on your rod. And so if you set it down and it's not those two parallel lines of the outer surface of that reel foot sitting flat on the table, then you might need to do some adjustments. Small adjustments you might be able to do on your own I really hesitate to say this. Get creative. I'm not going to advocate you messing with that. I've done it before, but it's not going to be something that I want you to jack up your reel. So what you do, send it back to the manufacturer. Say, hey, this is out of whack. This is out of kilter. Can you put it on a piece of equipment? If you have a friend who's a machinist or somebody like that, then take it to them. But it will not work in the long run. You will damage your reel seat on your rod and the uplocking hardware on your rod if that is bent. But the manufacturer should be able to take care of you. And like I said, if you do want to tinker around, you probably can fix it. It isn't impossible, but I just don't want to be liable for giving you bad advice. Not that you would complain to me, but I just don't want to be the one that gave you that idea. So yeah, send it back to the manufacturer. That's what warranties are for. And you will have a reel that sits snugly and safely on your rod. The one last thing that I want to mention before I wrap up this podcast is just take care of your reels. Clean them, inspect them, and sniff them. So why sniff them? This isn't a reel problem. This is a backing problem. Backing, with the exception of some nicer gel spuns, but Dacron backing will hold moisture and it will get funky. Anything that holds moisture is going to get funky over time. So sniff your reel. If it smells funky, then you want to pull that line off. And the line might still be okay, and most of the backing might be okay, but there might be some places where it's held some moisture, and there could even be mold or mildew in your backing on your reel. What's the worst thing that could happen? Well, it could spread. It could get to the back of your fly line, especially if you're fishing on a trout rod and you're not necessarily getting to that like 80 or 90 foot mark of your line very frequently. It might get there, but it's just not good. You don't want moldy stuff, hanging around. So sniff it. If it smells bad, then figure out why it smells bad. It might not be too late to actually just wipe it up and clean it up, and you should be okay. But if there is mold or mildew on your backing, I would go ahead and pull it all off, start over, and give your spool a nice deep clean. So do that. Rinse things out. Even click pawl reels, although it is an incredibly simple mechanism that is effectively just a spring or metal clip, if you will, that's causing enough tension to slow down that spool from spinning in a free spool manner. If some grit gets in there, if some debris gets in there, and again, if it's kind of debris that could hold moisture, now you have the potential not for mold or mildew, but the potential for rust, and a tiny little clip, even if it's made out of stainless steel, is eventually going to have a problem with that. So just check those things out and see if there's any wear. If it's a click pawl reel, again, you know, not a super complex mechanism, but it, over time, it has the potential to fail. And so if it looks like it's getting close, now's the time to call the manufacturer and say, hey, I need this. These parts are almost all super simple to do repairs at home, but it's better to have one on hand that way right before it fails or after it fails, if it's not a huge deal, then you can go ahead and replace it. You're not going to be without equipment for a long time. I've tried to kind of piece together and cobble DIY repairs on some real parts. It's just not worth it. It's easier calling the manufacturer, spending $5, then another couple bucks for shipping and handling to get that sent out to you so you can have it taken care of. So smell the backing, take a look at those inner parts, and then rinse and dry your reels. Rinse and dry your reels. There is so much unseen gunk. I have a number of disc drags that are not sealed drags, and they have performed great for over 20 years now, and all I do is rinse them, and let them dry. So much of your gear will benefit from being rinsed and dried. You rinse it with clean water, whether you're fishing in fresh water, because there's so much turbidity, there's so many, so much tiny matter in even the cleanest of water. But rinsing it in your tap or in your hose is going to flush all that stuff out. And then, of course, if you're fishing in the salt, I mean, you can use the cutest, tiniest little freshwater reel in the salt. As long as you clean it afterwards, it's going to be completely fine. And so do that even with your gear that is rated for salt water. And if you're not fishing salt all the time, then that is a reason why you don't need to invest in a big heavy-duty sealed drag, because if you clean it, then you'll be okay. All right, a couple of random reel things. This is fun. I enjoyed talking about it. I got actually a lot more mileage out of the few things I wanted to mention than I thought I did. So maybe we'll have another reel-focused podcast coming up in the near future. If you have any important reel things that you want to share, let me know. Matthew@castingacross.com. If you have anything that speaks directly to something I mentioned about reels today in the podcast, let me know. Again, Matthew@castingacross.com. And you can also reach out, feedback, because in a couple episodes, not episode 178 or 179, but 180, wow, 180. I will be doing listener and reader feedback on another Accusations podcast. So do let me know on social media @castingacross or Matthew@castingacross.com. This week on castingacross.com. First article, what's in your fly wallet? What's in your fly wallet? So the fly wallet is like the original fly box. Well, I don't know if it's original. I'm not sure what the original fly box is. I don't know if it's like a fancy little aluminum spring hinge box, or if it is a wallet, or if maybe it's the felt band on someone's hat. Not sure. I'm sure the information's out there, but fly wallets are very traditional. You know, when I was younger, and probably up until only about 15 years ago, Orvis ran this deal where they would send you a fleece, Schirling fleece fly wallet with like 12 of their favorite flies for like $15, and it was basically a way to get on their catalog rotation. But anyway, I think they're great. I don't use a Schirling fleece one. Actually, I take that back. I have a fleece wallet that I use for poppers, and it's in this article. But I like Velcro fly wallets. And so if you want a picture of a Velcro fly wallet, you can see one on What's in Your Fly Wallet, and you can hear why I use them and why I think they are worth consideration. And my favorite fly wallet I will talk about at the end of this podcast in the recommendation for this week. Second article is Rusty Flybox Vacation. Rusty Flybox Vacation. This episode is being released while I am wrapping up a trip down south. It is not a fishing trip, but it's a trip in which I fish. Anyway, on this post, I am including three articles that have to do with vacation, getting away. There's some story, there's some technique, so check that out, and hopefully you are planning a vacation. People are out and about and traveling after a few years of laying low. It's good to get away, so hopefully you get a chance to do that. This week's recommendation is the Vitavoo Fly Wallet. So Vitavoo, great company, handmade in the United States, in Massachusetts, to order. Excellent, durable, better American gear. They have three fly wallets. There's the Core, which is an 8-inch, a Predator, which is a 10-inch, and the Fly, which is 12-inch. And you can get them in vinyl, you can get it in a mesh, you can get it in a wax canvas, all sorts of materials you can get it in. But the inside is the loop side of Velcro material, which is great, holds flies, but you're able to pull them out very easily also. So these are great fly wallets. They're never going to fail on you. They have a little pocket inside where you can slide some leaders or like shock tippets or things like that. And you can, they Velcro closed. You can roll them if you want them to be more compact from like a square inch standpoint, or you fold them. They're like tri-fold and they can slide into your waders. You can put them in your vest. You can put them in your sling pack, wherever. But awesome little fly wallets, just a great thing to have on hand. I mentioned in the article, use them for flat saltwater flies, flatter streamers, as well as poppers. I think they're the best way to store that stuff, but you can really store anything in there with the exception of dry flies that you want to protect the hackle. So definitely check that out. I'll put a link to the VitaVoo fly wallets on this show's page on castingacross.com. Thanks for listening to the Casting Across Fly Fishing Podcast. Please subscribe to your favorite podcast app and rate the podcast on iTunes. Then head over to castingacross.com for 3 posts a week on the people, places, and things that go into the pursuit of fish.